Hello? Good, good, good. Hey guys, first of all, I am thrilled, honored, and very, very humbled to have this audience for a technical topic for a conversation, for a technical conference rather, for a topic like this. A little touchy-feely kind of stuff first thing in the morning on a big session for Ignite, but I'm absolutely humbled and thrilled to see all of you here and coming in, and standing room only in the back. Hey guys, I do think if there is an opportunity, because I've been in this position before, if there's an available seat next to you, please show of hands. If you could raise your hands for those in the back who want to sit down, please feel free. I've actually been doing a session much like this previously, where some of the feedback I was given is that I didn't give an opportunity for people in the back to find a place to sit, which was true. So again, find a seat. I want to make a, I want to have a jovial and friendly conversation with you today, and I want you to feel comfortable and come along with me for the journey. All right. First of all, thank you all again for showing up, and I hope everyone's ready for a good Ignite. Did everyone go to the opening kickoff last night? Show of hands. Yeah, everyone. Good, good, good. I hope that all went well. I unfortunately wasn't there. I was trying to get my dog and pony show ready for you guys this morning. So let me see. Sorry. One second. Pardon? No? Wow. There you go, there we go. Okay, cool. A quick introduction. Thank you very much to our technical standout. My name's Darren Hubert. I guess you can gather from my accent, I come from the US. I've been working with Microsoft for about 9 years now, and I have the honor of serving as chief architect of our services division covering APAC. So my remit is to work with our architect community and our customers and our partners on delivering meaningful experiences through the use of Microsoft technology in the APAC region, which is from Korea through Southeast Asia, and of course Australia and New Zealand. And it's I've been here a few times now, and I thoroughly enjoy every opportunity I get to come to Auckland in New Zealand. It's a beautiful, beautiful city, and thank you for having me here. What I want to talk to you guys about today, again, I start off by saying it's a little bit of a touchy-feely conversation on design thinking, but I think it's something that's deeply important for the industry and how we go about framing our mindset in order to drive innovation. And my purpose in here is one of the things is I'm very passionate about not just the technology, but about the people. Working for Microsoft, I have the opportunity to allow users, allow personas, allow real people to use Microsoft technology to ideally change their lives and give them meaningful use of productivity. So that's who I am, and I'm here for the week, and I'm also giving a session later this week on Friday on architecting for IoT, the Internet of Things. Feel free to come to that if you have the time. Just a few objectives for today's session. Again, I want to talk to you a little bit about design thinking, human-led design, human-led experiences. I want to cover these, the way I chose to break the session down is to cover into these three topics for you. I want to cover the what, to understand methods for developing digital experiences and sales and delivery motions. Some of you in the audience may be part of a system integration organization, so you probably sell to customers, or maybe you're selling internally to business stakeholders. And as well, not only as part of a sales motion, but during delivery, the implementation of that effort as well, including what I'm going to call human-led and inclusive design approaches. So that's really going to be the what, the foundation of the what is this. The how, as an architect, it's all about the application, the how. So how to apply these techniques within your projects with the aim of getting even more unique and more impactful outcomes. Something that is really becoming an important buzzword, important trend in the industry is delivering on successful and meaningful outcomes. And the last point I hope to address clearly is the why, and summarize why delivering these types of design-led experiences is tied not only to the transformation of our industry, our technological industry, but also, I would argue, for yourselves individually and your collective market success. So those are the objectives for the session I hope to emphasize with you today. So just some background, some context for design thinking. I hope this applies. This is the experiences that I have in my career. And I want to start off by saying that in today's world, everyone is in IT. So the history of, you know, I'm just going to speak from my own personal experience. The experience with Microsoft is we have great experience and a treasure of experience in selling and delivering our solutions and our softwares to IT. And they've been a very meaningful champion of our solutions and our technology and our services. We're seeing in Microsoft a shift, and it's not only in Microsoft, it's happening throughout the industry as well. I'm sure it's happening within your companies, within your organizations, and that's a shift to the business. The business is holding more power. They're having more need for delivering impactful outcomes. As evidenced by Gartner, who does these types of research, they're saying that the business, the BU, is influencing 78% of IT decisions, and more importantly, that the CMO or the power of that is controlling more spending than the CIO. It's a shift. It's a shift that's happening in some industries and some businesses, probably more rapidly than others, but it is happening and it is occurring. IT is having less control. Again, maybe you're seeing it with cloud solutions, moving data centers from on-premise to the cloud, but you're seeing it. So we're seeing that the influence of IT is diminishing, and there's a high level of funding that's coming from outside of IT, again, more often than not the CMO organization. So we're seeing that there, everybody's a buyer, and other companies, there are some companies out there who do a really, really spectacular job of selling to the business. I'll choose Salesforce as an example. Their history is in market-making opportunities by selling to the business. They sort of have been very successful at bypassing IT, talking to a line of business stakeholder, typically a VP of sales, who has a credit card and says, we could spin you up instantly. Versus IT, which will say, well, give us a business case justification, and then if we support it, we'll go through a procurement process for hardware, et cetera, months pass, business is moving on, nothing's changing. So again, business is having dramatic influence. Okay, I think this also impacts, and I think I just touched on a little bit about today's buying patterns, and it's not just the fact that the decisions are being decentralized, being shifted to the business. It's also about the need for impact now. The language of the business is that things need to happen more quickly than not, and I would argue the cloud is changing this. It's to deliver impact. It's a business versus a cost-based outcome, and is the buying experience something that's going to allow a business to explore new opportunities and new areas of growth? So that's the buying pattern that we're seeing, and I think the cloud is having a dramatic effect on this buying pattern. So as IT professionals, I consider myself one, I need to put myself in the mindset of business stakeholders and identify what is it that leaders want. Is that they want to innovate and bring to market new ideas, learn how to fail fast and learn quickly, prioritizing investments that generate differentiated value. So in this slide, I want to point out to develop new value in unexpected places. What are the new market opportunities? How can I, who are my competitors tomorrow? And how are they introducing disruption in the industry, and it's happening all over the place. Microsoft is being changed radically. We're having to pivot, and we're having to shift from a client-server type of business where we sell CAL and enterprise licensing to a consumption-based economics model where everything is being driven off of our cloud and how readily people are using it. But not just purchasing it, but actually consuming it and using it every day. So in order for us to be successful in my organization, we have to focus on business outcomes. And it's a pivot. It's certainly a shift in our thinking and it's something we have to do. And if we could do it yesterday, that would have been fantastic, but it's an evolutionary process for us. So we have to learn how to talk what business leaders want. Again, I said that I'm an IT guy. I've been in IT for quite a while now. Got some gray hair, I hope to prove it. But my experience in IT is that we often look at projects in a certain mindset where we come in, identify what's the project that has been budgeted for and through which some business analysts have identified requirements, and here's a new, let's just call it a CRM system, or here's a new productivity system, or here's a new knowledge management system. Now, let's go about the business of setting it up, doing our installation, our configuration, ideally before customization and the like. But we're experts at the what as IT. This is, I hope, one of the points I want to make to you. Is we jump to the what without deeply engaging or understanding the why. I think that that's common. I hope I'm not the only one who does this or has a history of having done it, being part of consulting organizations. We're so busy doing this, we don't have the time or the cycles to stop and learn why. Why are we doing this in the first place, assuming we need to do it at all? So that's the what and the how. But the why, as a compass, we often miss out. And therefore, we create a barrier for what I will call innovation, which is the seed for what I'm going to call design thinking. And generally speaking, we become experts at asking the wrong questions, and we've defended this as best practice. Here's a methodology, typically involves envisioning, requirements gathering, designing around those requirements, building, testing, deploying, supporting. But we don't often ask what's the core problem around which we're looking to fix. Okay? So that brings us to design thinking and the what. Design thinking is really, for the purposes of this conversation, it's an approach for getting at the why, helping arrive at that. Again, we're experts at the what and the how, arriving at the why, and for the solutions that we build. It's a form of, by definition, solution-based thinking, which is seeking to define all, which solution-based thinking, what it does is defines all aspects of a problem before creating a solution. Again, looking at something more holistically. It's a discipline for figuring out the how, and I think I would argue it's a foundation in architecture, and everyone here who, and I would argue everyone here has a role in architecture, whether or not by title you're impacting or you're influencing an architectural decision within the customer, within your own organization. I would argue that design thinking certainly has to be a pillar and a mindset and part of your tool bag as you implement architectures across your organizations. Okay, it's also a shift, and again, it's a shift pivot from individuals to teams. The type of thinking that I want to showcase and highlight isn't about one person having an ingenious idea and being able to go build it. It's about building a consensus of people, building a consensus of teams, because ultimately it's a cultural shift. And like if anyone has studied or gone through any type of ProSci ADCAR type training, you know that in order to do any type of cultural change or change management, you have to really build consensus and build awareness. The desire to change, the knowledge around that change, make sure the users, the personas, the people have the ability to change, and then reinforcing that change. It's also moving the shift from products and solutions, again, a world in which I have a lot of familiarity, to experiences, and again, it's the experience around the end user. Again, very important in a consumption-based software model where, irrespective of how something is sold, it's only monetized if it's used, and it's only going to be used if it provides value. It's not providing solutions that people think they want. It's providing solutions that people, you know, love, and that's something that we're trying to, in Microsoft, adopt and have it become part of our fabric, part of our culture. Okay, to highlight and showcase an example, and forcing through my role, I come across a wide variety of examples. The one that stuck to mind and I want to bring out is as an illustrative example of design thinking, and more importantly, experiences which I just shared with you, is a project called the Guide Dogs Project. And this is a joint project between Microsoft Services and Guide Dogs UK, which is one of the largest charities in the United Kingdom with a vision of helping out visually impaired persons. Their vision is for a society in which people who are blind or partially sighted enjoy the same freedom of movement, as everyone else. And this is a project that we went in with them, and we developed a unique technology solution, but highlights a unique challenge. Okay. The whole objective, I'm going to showcase a little video here that highlights this, but it's to create an experience for people with blindness that enables a new level of independence and freedom. And it's the whole objective and the vision here is to demonstrate how universal design or design thinking, this concept, can accelerate innovation and enable a new bar for usable and accessible experiences. The project here, I want to show you a video called Cities Unlocked. The whole idea is to use sound, 3D sound, to allow a visually impaired person to navigate the city. So it's through the use of 3D sound technology, a type of a headset, that would connect to a person's jawbone and would inject sound through the jaw, exposing the ear so you can hear outside noise, road noise, passengers, bicyclists, while still being able to hear the environment around you. What time a bus is arriving if you're going to it? Is the train delayed? If you have to use a restroom, physically, where is it in the building and how can you get there? It's done through a smart app that's connected to Wi-Fi around you, which is being fed through beacon technology that's pointing out where things are, such as lifts or platform or buses here. So I want to showcase a little video really quick. Bear with me. And I hope it talks a little bit about the future of technology here.
I've been blind now for 10 years, and I have diabetic retinopathy. There's a real lack of, when you're visually impaired, being able to be free and spontaneous.
If you're really going to provide people the ability to get around independently with confidence and with dignity, you have to be really sensitive to where they are on their own personal mobility journey.
Informational needs. So just as you're walking down the street, how could you change your outcome? How could you change your perspective on what's around you just by serving up different information? Search isn't really about answering questions, but is in fact about serving the most appropriate information within the context of what you're trying to do.
There is a lot more potential for people who are scared of technology to embrace it and to benefit from it and to take advantage of the opportunities that technology provides for them.
Good technology is almost invisible psychologically to the person that's using it because they just consider it to be an extension of their own physicality.
We want to live like normal people. We don't want to always plan ahead to see if we can get community transport or a taxi or something. We want to be able to just jump on a bus and go sometimes and have that freedom.
We wanted to come up with a series of ideas and concepts which were applicable to everybody. So they weren't necessarily focused on people with a visual impairment of some sort. We wanted to look at how this would benefit and add value to everybody.
Technology out there, I think, could give us that independence and freedom.
This is an actual, bear with me, guys. This is an actual solution. This is an actual technology that's been developed. How's the video? And the gentleman in this photo is a good friend of mine. I dine with him and his family often. He lives in Singapore with myself. He's from the UK, and he's blind. And he's, like me, an architect with Microsoft Services. And he's sort of one of the spiritual guys who's helped sort of launch this whole initiative. And through the use of design-led thinking, this type of approach, he managed to bring together over 150 people, both in Microsoft and a charity, Guide Dogs, which he is a board member of, and help introduce this technology. He's worked with Microsoft Research, who is the group that came up with the whole idea of 3D sound. Not over the ear, but through the jawbone. Again, it's a type of technology that Microsoft Research has arrived at. Now is this technology now is looking for a solution. Here's a great application of that solution. And it paired with mobile phone technology, so it's a great opportunity. Blind people do carry mobile phones uniquely, whether or not everyone knows that. They're able to use screen reading and screen scraping technology to pass through the audio of what's being said through their ears, so they can have that as well. And pairing that with technology like iBeacon to really provide this 3D environment, it's a really unique project. It's a really unique solution. It allows people to live with mobility and do it with honor and decency. And it's an incredible technology. It's an incredible use case. I'm going to try and talk about how they went about doing it over the course of my next section, the how. But I just want to give this as an example of what I would call design thinking, taking a unique problem and providing a unique new solution to how to go about addressing it. Okay? So the innovation here, other than the application of the technology, which is, again, this 3D headset. Here's a picture. I wanted to showcase it to you where it does sit on the jawbone. It's not in the ear. Again, my point of allowing a deaf or a blind person, rather, to hear their surroundings, because that's certainly one of their more heightened senses with the loss of vision. And pairing that with a very easy gesture-based phone application to allow them to say, where's my next train? Where's my next bus? Where's the next restroom? How can I get a cup of coffee? Again, giving them that independence. Certainly a really unique story to tell, and I hope to tell it right now. So the how. How do we go about this element of design thinking? I would argue everyone here, being seasoned technologists in the room, looking around here, I can tell everyone's been doing this before. This is nothing new. It's just, I would argue, it's a reframing of existing technologies. I hope existing frameworks and methodologies and patterns that you've done before. But I just want to, if I can accomplish anything today, I want you to think about in a different pivot, a different mindset of how you engage the end user and help create new experiences that allow them to, per the video, see technology as just a extension of themselves, much like a cell phone is to today, or a pair of nice comfortable shoes, or sunglasses. Again, all around the experience. Okay. The way I want to frame this, and again, this is nothing new. I trust most of you have done a lot of reading on the topic, hence the high amount of interest in the room. But it's a mindset. I just want to talk about how I would frame this for you. We talk about three domains, three spaces, and three pillars, starting from the inside out. I'll call this the three illities: the desirability, viability, and the feasibility. These are the constraints in which we, as architects, we have to engage a particular problem. Identify whether or not it's viable. Do we have the technology? Is the technology capable of fulfilling this unique problem? Is it feasible within the constraints imposed on me, probably by the business? We always have funding and scope and schedule as constraints. Is it feasible within those parameters? And then the thing that I think we have to also pivot for is it desirable? Is it something that I can create that the end user, Sally, the branch manager, who needs a new reporting platform, is it something that she's going to use, something that she can use easily and enjoy and adopt using? And that's the desirability factor. That's surrounded by what I'll call spaces. I don't want to call them anything other than that. It's not a framework, it's just a space where you probably jump in for a little bit and jump out, like a room. And those are inspiration, ideation, implementation. Inspiration, again, is I need to step into the space, into this room, and inspire as to what's going to be unique. How can I help solve this unique problem? What's different about it? I'll remove myself from my project teammates and help me think through what's a new way of looking at something, that whole inspiration. What's familiar to me, okay? Observation, I would say this is, you know, interacting with our environment. Probably shouldn't say this, but we have two eyes, two ears, one mouth, and as architects, we should probably operate with that breakdown of speaking probably 20% of the time. Knowing myself, it's probably the the converse of that, where I probably speak 80% of the time as opposed to 20% of the time. So it's something I have to pull myself back on, to opening up my ability to participate in active listening. It's something that sometimes is hard for me, but it helps me be a better observer. And then lastly is empathy, and that's understanding the story, understanding the persona, understanding the user. Back to my example of Sally, the branch manager. Am I going to give her a BI solution based on Power BI, or am I going to give her something unique that addresses her problems for how she does her reporting so she can make, you know, quick business decisions? Again, empathy, understanding that user. So those really are the three domains. Again, nothing revolutionary, stuff I trust everyone here has done before. I'm going to peel the layer, though, and go into what are these human-led factors, okay? The illities, the three illities, the viability. Again, these are the constraints that we work with every day. From a business, is it economically viable? Again, typically, these are all within projects. Do we have enough resources to accomplish this? Is it economically viable? Again, do we have enough budget for it? Does it make business sense? Is this something that we're going to do that makes business sense? And can it be sustained over the long term? That's the business factors. The technology factors, I trust everybody here in the room is very comfortable with, and largely our passion lies, and that's, is it technically feasible? This is the stuff on the right where I think we as architects spend most of our time, largely all of our time. And I think the point I hope to make is that we can keep that base, extend ourselves a little bit, and focus a little bit on the desirability and the human factors. So what do people desire? How can we make solutions that, and from what they need to solutions that they want? Again, the desirability factor. And empathy with the stakeholders. So that's really the basis for design thinking. Very much similar to Tim Brown's book, Change by Design, which leads to a lot of these three pillars. As well as for those who are familiar with IDEO and Stanford's D-School, where a lot of this design thinking comes from, Centered Design Kit, it also showcases that this is where design thinking is centered and where innovation largely comes from. Okay. The whole point of design thinking, I don't want to call them methods, I don't want to call it a methodology, I'll just call it 7 goals. If you can achieve these goals, it will help in this journey. It's not a destination, it's really a journey. And that's to define a problem, research a problem, ideate on that particular problem. The importance of prototyping, absolutely critical to this whole thing. Choosing, making the choice around a problem, and then again, the implementation. And then, of course, most importantly, the learning aspect. These are really the 7 goals. If we can get through this, we're really building on our skill set. We're really building on the foundation of architecture. Okay. So this is a unique slide. 1 second. I spoke earlier about, as architects, we really master the what and the how. We don't often think of the why. And the first element, the first goal, is to define and refine our problem space. And again, I'm using these illities, these three illities, to showcase that. And then group it by various different stakeholders. So, of course, within a project, again, in my role, I've done a lot of delivery work where my customer, they are internal stakeholders. I have to placate them and manage to their expectations. And they're certainly where I'm comfortable in the viability of a project and the feasibility of it technically. Again, being a Microsoft resource, that's why I'm hired. The disruptor, that's typically the CIO or COO, someone who's funding the initiative, someone who's really driving change. Maybe it's the CMO, given the conversation earlier where all of IT and a lot of budgeting is shifting towards the business. Okay, that's the disruptor. And then finally, the disrupted is, one would say it's the end user. It's the users who are going to be the consumers of the solution. I would argue the cloud changes that, and it's more than just the end users. Oftentimes with new technologies, with new solutions, IoT solutions, cloud solutions, its IT is also getting disrupted. their jobs are changing. Whether or not you are an expert, a ninja at tuning SQL, or maybe you're a ranger with Exchange, that job is changing. I'm not the one saying this is happening. I'm sure you're seeing it in your industry, in your organizations, in your customers. That type of skill set is changing, and therefore, with new type of thinking, you're being disrupted. Those roles and resources are being disrupted as well. So the whole point here is to help build the case, challenge the brief, challenge the thinking, and just make sure within your remit and within your area of responsibility, just define the right problem to solve and go through an iteration and refine it. Again, this whole point, the whole message, that this is a continuous mindset, a continuous process, and it's quite iterative, okay? So I would say here, encourage the disruptor and support the disrupted. And if you do that, you're certainly well on your way towards this journey. Bring it back to the Guide Dogs Project. They did an unbelievable amount of research. Not only did the team spend a lot of time navigating the matrix of Microsoft to identify what technologies were being developed by Microsoft Research, perhaps they were developing new modern apps, trying to identify how that works or can work with Wi-Fi and beacon technology that can be pushed to the device to say, I'm within 50 feet of a Starbucks. My bus because maybe the application knows where I'm going is running 5 minutes late. Maybe there's a traffic jam and I need to be mindful of that. So other than the technology, it's also putting yourself in the context of the user, the context of, as I just mentioned, the disrupted. And in this case, doing that research took fully abled people, and they would blindfold themselves and walk around town and just get the idea of what it's like to be visually impaired. The spiritual leader for this project, again, is a close friend of mine, and I've gone through this with him. I've been blindfolded. I've walked around with his cane, and I've bumped into every wall around my office as possible. But in the process, I learned how difficult it is. Within the UK, I think the stats are there's 240 million people in the US and the UK who are visually impaired, and 65% of them are unemployed because they can't confidently and with dignity get to the office and do their jobs every day. And I work with somebody who's part of that minority of 35%, and not only that, he's a highly functioning architect, an incredibly insightful individual. And it helps put context to the story. One of the things as a takeaway, as a goal, not only should I urge you to help do research, it helps you think about a unique problem to solve, but another way of doing it is through the use of personas to humanize that story. Just show of hands, have people done persona analysis, persona and storyboard-based analysis? A few of you, awesome. I hope it's given you a unique way of understanding and humanizing the story. So what I would say here, there's three sort of areas for the persona. And again, it's a powerful tool for the art of storytelling. Again, I view storytelling as an art. It has, obviously you're gonna have a bunch of tasks of what a persona needs to do. And you're going to have a bunch of motivators, or motivations rather, but it's bounded by goals. Within design thinking, they have this notion of when you do personas, you sort of aggregate the majority of them, and you call that the composite user. That's sort of like in a bell curve, that's your, you know, that's the main part of your user group. I would argue you also have to include the edge cases, the extreme users, one or two standard deviations of users. Because those users will make or break your adoption. And particularly for a technology or a solution that you have to impact potentially millions of people's lives, that edge case becomes very, very important for supporting and confirming your main thesis, your main point, your main goal. Okay, storyboarding, researching people in context, really, really important. And if you ever have the opportunity to actually see them and meet them and give themselves names, certainly the better. It's certainly a better idea to have someone, I'll pick on Sally, the branch manager, than User is a manager of a small retail bank. At least you have an idea of who that person is, what their struggles they have. Maybe they have two kids, they got late to work this morning, they're behind on their reporting, they need something that is really quick to be able to help them get through their jobs without being reprimanded by their leaders. So stuff like that. It's a really unique tool. This is one of my favorite things in a project, and I love working in project teams, and that's the whole idea of ideation. Ideation. This is getting back to, if you remember, the first three domains that I spoke about. This is the application of those three, of the insight, of the observation, and clearly the empathy. And ideation is a team-based activity where you help doing storyboards, you help idea, you help create the art of the possible. This is a slideshow from my friend and the Guide Dogs teams, where they help storyboard how it's going to happen, what are the solutions that they need to have. Again, the solution was we need to help, or the goal was to help people with visually impaired live a freer, more productive life. It was never around technology. It was never around using 3D headsets to 3D audio headsets to inject sound in their ear. And so it was around how do we do this, and that was the solution that the team came up with. And it was this whole ideation phase after doing their research. Okay, prototyping. Prototyping is probably one of the most important aspects to design thinking and to this whole idea. I've been holding this clicker for the last half hour, and you're not going to have the opportunity to work in a place where I can make a clay mold and identify, does this have the right feel in my hand? Does it have the right, point of balance? You're not going to have that type of opportunity, but you still need to create prototypes for something. And if it's a solution, what is that prototype? I would argue a storyboard is enough of a prototype, is enough of a definition. There's a whole concept called minimum viable products or minimum viable deliverables, MVP process, and the whole process there is, as you prototype, we need to fail fast and learn quickly, to use that adage. And what's the minimum amount of technology that makes this ID viable in order to determine if it's a go or no-go decision? And with all of these things, the idea of failing fast and learning quickly, iterating, is the key to it all. I was part of a project where we helped transform a drug company to monitor the safety and surveillance of all their products globally. And we had to come up with a new solution that dealt with dynamic and floating business problems. And we had to create a new engine, a new configuration-based engine that allowed a user to change the rules as to whether or not this drug that one would ingest, whether or not if there was an adverse event due to blood pressure, what are the new routing rules that we have to apply so that we can triage this case appropriately. And this was a problem that was outside of the technology, but we had to learn and ideate on it, and we came up with really what I would argue is a pretty unique solution, leveraging the technologies that we had and the budget that we had to enable this company to ultimately help with their goal of saving lives, and in this case, it was managing adverse events. To bring it back to the story at hand, the guide dog story, this is about creating a prototype, and the prototype of a storyboard here is a visually impaired person making their way ultimately through to a train system, and this was enough to get them started. And this was certainly one of the key points in their process of arriving at their destination, their solution. I'm going to try and steal a story from a friend of mine when I walk through this deck. He compared this idea to nimawashi, which is a Japanese term for laying the groundwork and moving a tree. The whole idea with this Japanese term nimawashi is that you take soil from one part of land, you slowly introduce it into the soil of a tree, get it acclimated to that tree over time, slowly, to the point where you can eventually lift up and move that tree and replant it. So it's considered an important element in any sort of major change initiative, and that's very much similar to what I would equate with storyboarding and prototyping. Nimawashi. The other goal, the next goal I want to talk about is the ability to choose. When you go through ideation phases there, you'll come up with a laundry list of things that you may want to do. There's a lot of creative thinkers in the room. There's a lot of creative technologies. There's a lot of way to apply those creative technologies. But at the end of the day, you have to make a choice. The thing that I've experienced in my time is when you have a lot of choices, as an architect, you want to dig down, ensure that it's robust, it's scalable, it's going to support the user base, it's going to support the amount of stress testing and load testing, upgradability and the like. And sometimes when you get into that pattern, you have what I would argue is analysis paralysis. There's a term I like to use called stick and move. Stick and move. You have to make a choice sometimes. And you're never presented with complete information. You rarely are presented with the whole picture. So you always have to use your intuition, use your experience, use your gut to make a choice in how you apply that technology. Okay? Very, very important. I would argue that quick wins and sustainable value are probably the right things to look at as you choose your options. But as any good architect, be open to feedback. Be open to new ideas. So be flexible. And combine or separate as needed. Those are the elements of choice I want to share with you. Okay? And implement the comfort zone. The comfort zone. This is where, as we as technologists, we love being an implement. We love being able to say, okay, we've defined this problem. We've ideated around it. We've finally picked a choice. We've made our choice as to how we're going to do it. Now I get to crack open Visual Studio and I get to code. This is something where, as technologists, we're very, very comfortable. I would argue, always, you have to learn how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. So as you go through this process, always remember the use case, remember the users, remember the research that you did, the personas. So don't forget the vision and the people as you go through the whole idea of implementing. And the fact that it's iterative, I would argue you have to test, 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 refine, 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 get buy-in, and stick and move, stick and move. So it's a great, this is, again, I know everyone here has done this before, not new information. But again, don't forget the vision and the people. I started earlier by saying, as technologists, we work really well in the feasible and the technical. We sometimes don't pay enough attention into what's desirable, and I think it's no more important than during an implementation phase, okay? This is a great one, learn and relearn. My favorite quote here is from Bill Gates, and not because he founded Microsoft, but it's, he will always choose the laziest person to do a difficult job because that person will find the easy way to do it. But the whole idea, the whole basis is that you can think like a beginner or think like a tourist, think like it's your first time in this new room, okay? My management team, I was in an offsite in Jakarta a couple weeks ago, and the general manager of our division came out and he was telling a story. And one of the stories he said was basically he wanted to break up, you know, my organization's going through radical change right now. We're going through a tremendous transformation, and this whole idea of design thinking is, you know, in different ways, or human-led design is being trying to be ingrained into our culture and into our heads. And he was part of an experiment where, or basically with a working group, where they were presented with building a paper structure, and they had a bunch of 10-year-olds in the room and a bunch of seasoned management professionals in the room, and who could build the strongest one in the shortest amount of time. And 9 out of 10 times, it was the 10-year-olds that won. Because the adults, the management team, they're going to sit there and they're going to plan. They're going to make sure that they identify the context of the problem, and then they're going to document their design, and then before they go into implementation. While the kids just went at it, and they failed first, they learned fast, they failed first, and then all of a sudden they had a more viable structure. They built the paper tower quickest, fastest, and better. And it was because they had no inhibitions. They didn't care. They thought of creating a new problem uniquely. And that's the thing I would like to impose here. Because if you have a new solution, or if you have a new problem, if you go to some industry folks, maybe if it's if you go to a telco guy and say, here's a solution in banking, if he says, well, I've done this 17 times, here are my practices, that's probably not the story that's going to get you to transform. But if you're able to step back and think again like a tourist, it will really help with thinking abstractly and thinking in a new light. So the point here is that what we learn today becomes our informed insight tomorrow. So this is really an important message, and again, I really like the quote here. Think like a beginner, think like a tourist. All right, so where am I on time? The why. You know, why this design thinking? Why is this important? I think it's evidenced by the attendance in the room. And again, I'm really flattered and humbled that all of you came here to be part of this discussion. So it tells me that you're hearing this as well. You're probably having to go through some sort of change, some sort of transformation in your own right. So you want to learn what are some principles, what are some practices for how to go about delivering change. So three pillars of human-led design. Things I would just want to mention are the motivations, helping people, I would argue the end users, maybe it's the visually impaired in that example, achieve what is important to them. And if it's important to live a mobile life where I'm not entirely dependent on others, that's a huge motivation, it's a huge goal. Building relationships. When you go through these teams and you go through these types of projects, you're going to get to know people over time. And the one thing that is going to build the foundation for that is trust. So build and maintain trust. Relationships are over time. They're important, and they grow in stages. And it helps you get to know people in meaningful ways. I think this is also really important as you get into really complex projects. And I would argue the Internet of Things and IoT types of projects are really complex problems and complex projects. And they involve a village of people to implement those types of solutions. So again, building relationships is certainly key. And it's the type of design thinking that's really going to deliver a meaningful result in an IoT solution where you're just getting streams of telemetry and streams of data, but you have to make sense out of it all, and not just make sense out of it all, provide meaningful action so that something can be done. What's the action that needs to be delivered? Again, design thinking applies there, I would argue. And finally, you have to do something what's appropriate. And appropriate could be a lot of different things. You know, solutions that integrate to the human world, that's appropriate. Is it appropriate for the capabilities and the limitations of that individual? Again, the whole idea of handing out a headset that doesn't cover a person's ear so that they can not only hear noise that you want them to hear through the 3D sound system, but also being able to hear the environment around them. And of course, is it appropriate given the economics? Is it something that the business is willing to fund? Is my manager or my leaders willing to fund this type of initiative? Can I get done what needs to be done in the constraints that are imposed? That type of appropriateness. Those are the pillars around which every architect lives in. And again, I treat all of you as a room of architects. These are the constraints around which you all have. Okay. So why this discussion? I hope everyone at some point in time has read the book, Who Moved My Cheese? And the whole basis is that our lives are changing, our jobs are changing, our industry is changing. And the success, from a personal perspective, the success that I've had previously is not gonna get me to enjoy the same success that I hope to have in the future. I have to shift, I have to pivot, I have to learn and relearn, because the disruption that's happening in the industry is happening at an ever-increasing rapid pace. And I think everyone here likely has heard that from, I'm sure the keynotes covered it, as well as what's happening in your neck of the woods. So the myth of innovation is that it brings brilliant ideas from the minds of smart people, and that's not true. The myth of innovation is that it's through a lot of hard work. It's a lot of grunt work. It's a lot of research, a lot of analysis, a lot of empathy for what type of problem you're going to solve, But that's really where ideas come from. And everyone here is certainly capable of coming up with the next brilliant idea that you can apply in your personal and or your professional lives. And then I would argue this discussion, I want it to be a continuous learning process. Everyone here should be a continuous learner. You have to thrive on learning, thrive on new ideas, thrive on pushing the boundaries. Very, very, very important. And new important, these approaches, I would argue, are key to cope with the transformation of an industry, a transformation of a company, the transformation of an individual, okay? That's why I feel this discussion is important. Why now? Within a company that's, I'll choose and I'll pick on Microsoft for a moment. Microsoft is going through a huge transformation. I started this conversation off that we were very successful in the enterprise agreement business where everything was on client-server licensing. Whether or not something got consumed, Microsoft largely hoped that it was used, but we didn't check in on it. We weren't ensuring that adoption and change management was happening. That wasn't our business. In the consumption model in which we now live, it's absolutely fundamental. Microsoft is now having a cultural change. Luckily, it's being driven from Satya Nadella on down, where we are empowered as individuals, as business units, as teams, to think differently and come up with new and meaningful ways of addressing unique problems. And I would like to make the assertion that this is something that is going to happen culturally within all of our organizations, all of our companies, both professionally and I would argue even personally. So the point here, why now? Design thinking has to be at the core of an organizational change, organizational culture, to create a culture. Again, culture is desperately important that focuses on unique problem solving. For those who have had the opportunity to go through a change management ProSci type of training course, you learn that you can have the brightest idea, you can have brilliance, but unless people follow on, unless the culture of the company adopts and breathes and thrives and employs that cultural shift, it's not going to go anywhere, and you're not going to have the change that's ultimately desired. Okay, so that's why now. I think it's very important. So here's a great quote I love on problem solving, that we cannot solve a problem by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. Very much similar to the successes that myself personally may have enjoyed in the past. That's immaterial, it's irrelevant to what I'm going to do in the future. All the learnings, all the stuff that I had, that's great knowledge, but it's not going to help me. But what will help me, and I hope what will help you, is having an open mindset to be able to learn and to relearn. Okay, that's really the critical thing I'd like to point out. So that said, there's this a doctor at Stanford named Carol Dweck, and she wrote a book called Mindset. It's a unique book. I suggest to everyone, if you have an opportunity, to read it here. But the thing here is it a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset? In your organizations as architects, you will come across those who have what I would argue is a fixed mindset. It's predictable, it's comfortable, it allows me to come in, get my job done in the time duration that I have to do it, and allows me to go home, live my life, be with my family. It's very predictable, it's very comfortable. And in doing so, the types of behaviors that it elicits are effectively it avoids challenges, avoids failure, because that ultimately is career limiting potentially. So therefore, the people give up easily. It happens, I've seen it time and time again. People tend to stick with what they know. They don't want to go beyond that. If you're an exchange guy, maybe you don't like the fact that I now have to likely become an identity guy. Maybe I have to become a cloud services guy, because damn it, what I know really well is exchange. I've had an amazing career doing that. That's not what's going to get you there. People with this ignore feedback and criticism. I think one of the best things that you can give somebody, if they're open to it, is feedback. It's really hard sometimes to take it, but if you have an open mind, if you have that type of mind, you're able to learn on it and you're able to grow. And then again, those who are threatened by others' success. That's the last point. You know, if someone else in your team is getting a lot of accolades, is getting promotions, is getting noticed, some people feel threatened by that. That's a static mindset. That's something that's not going to allow for human-led design, human-led thinking. So I would argue that it's the growth mindset, and it's an uncomfortable position. I think I mentioned earlier, part of an architect's remit is to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I would argue that that's part of having a growth mindset, where you constantly desire continuous learning. You know, even an insatiable appetite for it. And if you have it, God bless you. I have the opportunity to work with people like that. It's amazing. Persists and confronts uncertainties. That type of mindset, people go into a problem, they want to attack the unknown. And it's, you know, they approach it with, you know, bright eyes and bushy tails, and they learn and they do the research, they do the prototyping, they go through that whole how phase. Again, persist and confront uncertainties. They see work. Work is work. Work is effort. Work, but it's necessary. It's necessary to learn, to push, to grow. And if you have that appetite, you know, learning is it doesn't become effort, it becomes passion. So again, puts an effort to learn. And then I would argue the last thing here, the point made from Carol Dweck, is that people with a growth mindset are inspired by others' success. There are people in the room here who inspire me. I've had the opportunity of working with some amazing professionals standing in the back of the room on the side who, whenever I have conversations with them, I leave that conversation invigorated. I leave that conversation excited. And it's because of their success and the amazing work that they do, it drives me to, you know, pick up the pace a little bit and make sure that I'm keeping pace and earning the right to be in their network. So stuff like that. That's why I think this is an important topic, something you ought to read. So I'm sure everyone is wondering, what's the point? What's the point of this? I hope I've addressed that over the point of this conversation. What's the point? And the point is that designing for the 1%, even if it's designing for the edge cases of people who are visually impaired, which is sort of a small minority of people, but if you're designing for them, you're designing for us all. And that's really, really important to think about. So as you walk away, please place the end user at the center. And by the way, I did change this to make it English appropriate. I did have it as RE. Again, I'm a Yank. Challenge your customer's point of view. And if it's your customer, it could be your business stakeholders. It could be, literally, if you're a professional service individual like myself, it could be your customer. Challenge their point of view to really identify what is the problem that we're going to solve and how can we best tackle it. Okay? Really, really important thing to do. Democratize envisioning. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has the right to be part of that, what that solution is, especially end users, especially the people. If going back, I spoke about the disruptor, the stakeholders, the disrupted. Disrupted folks are typically the end users, and they should be part of the envisioning process as well. Certainly will help with adoption, builds awareness. Demonstrate courage and curiosity. That is certainly very important. It's courageous to be curious. And as architects, I would argue it's a foundational pillar. Part of your tool bag is to always have that insatiable curiosity. And then back to the whole prototyping thing. Even if it's a storyboard might be enough, but it's just to get a concept out there. And small, rapid, iterative deliveries, the whole minimum value of a deliverable, the minimum value of a product. What's the absolute minimum? Don't gold plate anything to get it out there. Does this work? Does this apply? The minute you start gold plating stuff, the minute you start, you know, wasting time, wasting resources, wasting energy. That's not the point. The point is just to get the proof of concept, get it out there, learn quickly, not to gold plate stuff. And I'm guilty as anybody of gold plating stuff because I want everyone to have a great opinion of me. And so I've gone through that myself. Doesn't add a lot of value, but it's something I have to pull myself back on. Done it many times, guilty. So anyway, in recap, I just want to say these were the objectives of the session. I hope I addressed them. I tried to make every effort to identify within this whole element of design thinking, you know, the what. So I hope I covered some methods of digital experiences. I wanted to showcase that example of of guide dogs, of how this, what are the approaches around it, the how, what are the techniques? I spoke about the seven goals. Those seven goals are, it's not a framework, it's not a methodology, I'm just calling them goals. You can pick and choose which apply for the situation which you're in. I covered those, of how these techniques can help you with the aim of grading even more important outcomes. Again, doing a lot of that research, putting on a blindfold and walking around a building like this. Try doing that for a day. It'll certainly change your mindset. And then the why, summarizing why this is important, why delivering these types of digital-led, human-led, it's all the same word, by the way, it's all the same thing, is intrinsically tied to our transformation as individuals, but our market success as well. So that said, there is a group of amazing folks here from Microsoft Services, and so if you're interested, depending on your current situation, if you're interested in learning about design thinking, there's some amazing professionals who'd love to have a conversation with you. So that said, I really want to thank you again for your time. Thank you for filling up the room. I really do feel humbled to be here and being able to present to you, especially the first session of your Ignite. So that said, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. And the last point I want to make, as someone who likes to proclaim that I'm a design thinker, I'm trying desperately to become one, and having a growth mindset, I'm desperately open to feedback. This is a new topic, a new session for me, and if you have feedback as to how I can make it better, what were the points that you liked, what were the points that I may have glossed over a little bit, I'd really welcome your feedback. Thank you very much. Have a great week. So wake me up.